you say? Ooh, what you say? Ooh, that you only meant well, well, 'cause you did. Ooh, what you say?
Welcome to another installment of the Fifth and Inches podcast. We've been off for a while, so I apologize about that for the listeners, but we're back, and we're back in a thrilling fashion. Now, we're joined by Jason Schroeder again. You heard his voice first on the World Cup podcast, the last one we did. Now we're going to talk a little bit about college football. Schroeder is just kind of our expert for this podcast. Now, we've been holding off on talking about all the things that are going on in college football, the USC sanctions and the college football conference realignment and all sorts of things like that. And we'll do a little bit of team previews today. But just real quick, Jason, for the casual college football fan, having seen what happens and what's going down this whole summer, what should they think about all the changes that are happening in college football?
Well, right now we're seeing it's just a major shift in college football. You know, by the end, by the time this thing's all said and done, it could be a completely different landscape. We could end up with the four super conferences like people are talking about. And this, a lot of people are thinking this could lead us to the playoff when we get these super conferences. So it'll be interesting to see how all this shakes out, you know.
So is this good for college football, or what's your opinion on that?
I mean, I personally didn't think there was anything wrong with the old conference system, but it's all about money now. People are trying to get as much money as they can. With the new networks they're forming, that's more money opportunity.
Right.
I'm a traditionalist. I'm a BCS fan, actually, so I don't think... I don't want to see a playoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean,
why do you like the BCS? You just been okay with it every year?
Yeah, or? I mean, the tradition of the bowl games is awesome, and the regular season in college football is the most important out of any sport because, you know, you lose one game, you're almost out of contention for a national title. Right. You lose two games, you can just, your chances are completely gone. So it's just real important to come out ready to play every Saturday, and that's what makes college football special, I think. No other sport has that.
And you mentioned that, I mean, you thought that you were okay with the conferences that they had now, and I thought the same thing, especially the Big 12, which is the conference that got kind of torn apart or could have potentially been completely demolished. Now, I don't really understand why some of the teams left that conference. I thought it was probably the second best conference in the nation. But, I mean, were you surprised to see some of the teams that did go and then some of the teams that were thinking of going?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm surprised the Pac-10 took Colorado. I mean, it looked like they were just looking to add numbers rather than a quality school. I guess geographically it fits, but what does Colorado bring to the Pac-10?
Right.
You know, they're not a traditional powerhouse. They bring the Denver market, I guess, but that's, I think it's like the 16th best market in the nation, which I guess that's important for the Pac-10, but still, kind of a strange choice in my opinion.
Right. And so the Pac-10 got Colorado. I think they were aiming for a couple other big-name Big 12 teams, like such as Texas and I think Oklahoma. They didn't get them. Are you surprised that they decided to stick with the Big 12?
I kind of am surprised because all indications, once this all started happening a couple weeks ago, was that the Big 12 is just going to fall apart. And, you know, for the sake of Kansas, Missouri, Kansas State, Baylor, all those guys who would have had nowhere to go, they lucked out because otherwise, you know, you would have seen Kansas probably go to maybe the Mountain West or something, and think of Kansas basketball playing in the Mountain West. That's an RPI killer right there.
That's, I mean, that's the thing I was just, like, freaking out about because, I mean, the word on the street a few weeks ago was that, like, Kansas State, like, Texas A&M and Baylor and Iowa State, that those were all maybe Mountain West teams in the future, but they're obviously not as of right now. I don't know, things could still change, but I could never stop thinking about Kansas's basketball team, who's always the best team in the nation almost every year, playing in the Mountain West. I mean, one, that would give, I mean, it gives their football team, I guess, an easier path to getting back on a winning record, but I think the basketball team maybe would have given them a little bit of, I don't know, less respect, I guess, to come tournament time to say, oh, well, these guys were only able to play good teams in non-conference, and in the conference, they went undefeated, but that doesn't mean anything. It's the Mountain West.
That's right. Their RPI would just, it would suffer, definitely.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's something I think I would have been okay with. Would have had to get used to the basketball part of it, but I think for all those teams that I just mentioned, the Mountain West would have been a better conference for them, I think, because they really are just kind of being thrown under the rug in the Big 12.
And speaking of Mountain West, you had Boise join, which looked like a good move.
Yeah.
But then I think it was the very next day, Utah bolts, so they're gone out of the Mountain West. And then let's say the Big 12's not done yet. They may be looking to add Houston or even TCU out of the Mountain West. So if they had one or both of those, that just diminishes the Mountain West even more. And Boise's move from the WAC to the Mountain West is looking more like a lateral move from every team that leaves. You know? It's just...
Now, I was surprised that the Pac-10 didn't take a different route. I mean, if I was their commissioner, I would have maybe taken more of a look at Boise State instead of Utah. And I thought Utah was probably a better fit for, say, the Big 12 after they lost Colorado. Just add one more team really fast and just kind of swap teams out there.
Yeah. You would trade the Denver market for the Salt Lake City market, which seems pretty even to me. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I agree with you. Boise seemed like they acted pretty quickly, didn't? You know they had to see some of this coming, so they joined the Mountain West and everybody starts leaving. Had they joined the Pac-10, they probably would have been a lot better off right now.
Right.
I guess, I don't know, maybe they didn't have an offer from the Pac-10. I don't know what the deal was, but you have to question that a little bit.
I feel like that's always been the rumor, though, is Boise State and Pac-10, just because, I don't know, I kind of feel like Boise State's location fits in a little bit more in a groove with the rest of the Pac-10 along the coast, and it's kind of a little bit further in the coast, into the, you know, farthest from the coast, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I thought that was always the rumor, and so that's obviously what I expected. But the Pac-10's got to be very happy, at least I would, about Utah. I think Utah is probably the better football program.
Yeah, based on historically, I'd say Utah's definitely better. But Boise's, as of recently, is coming on a lot stronger than Utah, and it looks like they're Boise's primed for another strong season this year. They got a ton of guys back. I think they're going to be loaded.
Speaking of Boise State, so they're moved to the Mountain West now. When does that begin?
I want to say 2011. Is that right?
I think that's when most of them begin.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure. I got to check the facts on that. But
I think Colorado's might be 2012 to the Pac-10. But
okay.
Everything else, I think, is 2011.
Okay. But in terms of Boise State, say a team preview, we can look at them here for a little bit. They're still in the WAC, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So they should probably be in line to dominate that conference again. You have Phil Steele at your right hand here. What is he saying about Boise State?
Well, they've got 21 out of their 22 starters back, which is just pretty insane, especially coming off the season they just had, having almost everybody back. All they lost was Kyle Wilson, their cornerback that was a first-round draft pick.
Right.
But they've been recruiting well. They've got guys waiting in the wings to fill his shoes. And, I mean, 21 starters back, playing in the WAC. You know their conference is going to be pretty easy for them. But the real trick is they're open the season against Virginia Tech. And that game's in, I think, Washington, D.C. So,
yeah.
You know, that could have national title implications on it. If they lose that one, they're probably out of contention.
Right.
If they win it, they're still in contention for their first non-automatic qualifier berth in the national title game.
And if they win that game, pending on what Virginia Tech does the rest of the season, because they've been a little shaky the past couple years, that maybe gives them a little bit more reason to be picked in the BCS as a number one or number two at the end of the season. But I think in everybody's eyes, a loss in the WAC should be a disappointment for Boise State, who you said returns almost everybody.
Yeah, definitely. There's no reason they shouldn't run the table in the pack. They're in the WAC, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, they start off with Virginia Tech, and then they play somebody week two, I forget who. But week three, they go to Oregon State, which that should be another test because Oregon State's on the rise right now.
Right.
They got Jaquizz Rogers back at running back, and he's always he's got an awesome name. He's got some skills to back it up.
Right.
So they got two tough tests early on in the year, and if they come out of those 2-0, I think we got a serious chance of seeing them in the title game.
All right, and You know, Boise State obviously developing a really good football program over the past few years, and you said the only guy they lost is Kyle Wilson. It's a cornerback, and that's, I think, one of the more easily replaceable positions in college football.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you stick an athlete, a good athlete back there, and teach him a little bit of fundamental footwork and hip work and whatnot. Yeah. You know, if he's got some athletic ability, he can learn it pretty quickly. But, I mean, it's not like they haven't been recruiting well and they're trying to scrounge for somebody. You know, I'm sure there are guys waiting in the wings to take his spot. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they've got their quarterback, Kellen Moore's back. He had like an unheard of, I think it was 39-3 touchdown to interception ratio last year, maybe 37-3, something like that. So, I mean, you would think he's got to be a Heisman contender this year. But
So Boise State is, what is Phil have him ranked here?
Well, Phil's got number 6 in top 10. He's got some interesting picks ahead of him.
But they aren't the top-rated, like, middle conference kind of team. Who's that?
That's right. A lot of people would think Boise would be the first one, but Phil Steele has TCU as number 4, 2 spots ahead of Boise in the top 10.
Okay. Now, TCU, sure, they're probably going to be a very good program again. The Mountain West may be a little bit easier for them. I guess a couple years down the road when Utah leaves, they have a couple more years. I think maybe just one more year with Utah in there. But I don't know. I mean, I'll go to you on this. I don't know if TCU or Utah is the stronger team this year, what your opinion is on that.
I mean, both are solid picks. You can't go either way. But TCU, like Boise, is just loaded again. Their quarterback, Andy Dalton's back again. He's another one of those guys that had great numbers last year. And he's, you'd think, another Heisman contender going into the year. They're just all across the board on offense. They're loaded. According to Phil Steele, number 4 offense in the country as a whole unit. Okay. And, I mean, 16 starters back, although it's not the 21 that Boise has. 16 is still pretty legitimate. So they've got, I think, just as good of a shot maybe to make it in the title game as Boise. The only thing, Boise's got those 2 tests early that could really jump them ahead, you know, if they pull away with wins, you know.
That'd be a big resume builder there. So TCU, according to Phil Steele, is the favorite in the Mountain West Conference. Yep. A lot of other good teams in that conference. You're talking Heisman contenders right now. Who do you have on a list of, say, top 5? You already mentioned Kellen Moore, Andy Dalton. I would have Terrell Pryor probably on that list also.
Yeah, if he continues how he performed in the Rose Bowl last year, you'd think he's going to be in the contention. Mm-hmm. And then I think you have to look at last year's winner, Mark Ingram. Mm-hmm. He's got a good chance to repeat. Although, a lot of people wonder, is he even the best back on the roster? They've got Trent Richardson, who's technically the backup.
Right.
But a lot of people will think he might even be better than Mark Ingram. So
yeah.
I don't know if either of those guys will win the Heisman because they're going to be splitting carries. You know, it's not like one of them is the feature back.
Okay.
But, I'd say those 5 right there are probably your top contenders.
Okay. But then there's always the thing, you know, Mark Ingram, you say he can repeat, but I've always gotten this feeling that the Heisman voters don't like to choose repeat picks here year in and year out.
I think, yeah, in the past there's been some guys that you think deserved a repeat, like Tebow. You know, he had a good enough season to repeat.
Right.
But, yeah, for some reason, they seem to go against the guy who won the last year. But it's pretty rare that a Heisman winner comes back for the next year anyway, so.
Right. All right, well, let's get back into a little bit more of conference. We were kind of starting with the Pac-10 there. I'm going to go to ESPN for this. We have Ted Miller, an ESPN college football writer, talking about his suggested split of the teams. He has 2 kind of circumstances. We're going to look at both of them. One is a north-south split. One is an east-west. That's similar to, say, the SEC, which is the best conference, I think we'd agree, in the nation.
No doubt about it.
So for his north-south split, this is kind of who he has. The north would feature Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, and Washington State, whereas the South would include the 2 new teams, Utah, Colorado, UCLA, USC, Arizona, and Arizona State. The thing I immediately see about this split is that their main focus probably is keeping rivals together.
That's what it looks like to me. I mean, Cal Stanford together, both Oregon teams together, both Washington teams together. And then you don't split up USC, UCLA. So, I mean, they did a pretty good job with that idea of keeping all the rivalries intact.
Now, Colorado and Utah in the South, they come in here. I'd say for Colorado, kind of a bad draw if they were to be in the South. They aren't better than USC. I don't think they're better than Utah. I think Arizona State was probably better than them. I think maybe Arizona is probably their toughest contention not to be in last place right. In the South.
Yep. Yeah, no question. Colorado's coach Dan Hawkins is on the hot seat. They've been terrible the last couple years. So, you know, he's got one chance to prove himself this year, I think. And who knows, Colorado could be entering the Pac-10 with a brand new coach.
And I think if they have another bad season, I think that's got to be your first option. You're going into new territory, into a new conference. You might as well just try and start all the way over with a new coach. And I'm sure there will be some that are out there.
Yeah, you would think so. There's a lot of guys on the hot seat this year. Army's coach Ellerson is on the hot seat. Hawkins, I guess you could consider Ron Zook on the hot seat, although I'd give him two more years, not just one. So, yeah, I mean, you never know what could happen. The coaching carousel at the end of the year is always one of the best storylines in college football.
Right, right. One of the biggest storylines every year. Now, the North in this Pac-10 split, it kind of seems to me to be the year-to-year split, because these teams, you know, not all of them maybe are good every single year. Everybody has a down year. I think the immediate powers, say, coming in 2 years from now, Stanford, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, with Cal and Washington State maybe being the bottom two. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah, Washington State, I forget if it was last year or the year before. I want to say the year before. They were 0-12, you know, so
okay.
They're kind of in the cellar right now. Washington, only 5-7 last year, but Sarkisian, the former USC offensive coordinator, is starting to get things turned around. You know, they've got Locker. He's definitely the number one quarterback in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And he's building those recruiting classes with all his ties to California. So you'd think they're on the rise.
Now, for Washington, you mentioned they have Locker. This is, I think, his senior year, so that'll be his last. He won't be in this split. But looking at Washington this year, they do have Jake Locker. I do like what I saw of them last year. I took a lot out of the win against USC.
Definitely.
That I thought about Washington. Jake Locker, probably a consensus number one overall pick. But then we could look at their preview, say, and what you think about them. But then we might just have to look at Stanford, too. Andrew Luck, probably the consensus number two quarterback in the nation also.
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-10 is just, they're loaded with quarterbacks this year. They got Barkley coming back at USC. They got, like you said, Luck at Stanford, Locker from Washington, and even Arizona's quarterback, Nick Foles. He kind of gets lost in the discussion because of the three main guys, but Foles is definitely a good quarterback as well. And, yeah, I mean, those are the four main ones, but still, I don't know another conference that has four main quarterbacks just like that can dominate.
Definitely a big year coming up for the USC. You don't want to see those quarterbacks disappoint, especially the Pac-10, because they're going to welcome in some new teams in a couple years, and they want to kind of be on the high. Now, a big part, I think, of this whole conference realignment, especially in the Pac-10, and in the Big Ten, I suppose, these conferences want conference championship games, which I would agree with them that is a definite need, because that's a definite draw and something that makes the Big 12 and the SEC two of the best conferences in the nation.
Definitely. And with this north-south split that the Pac-10, that Miller proposed for the Pac-10, if the favorites, who you think would be the favorites, if they win every year, you've got a championship matchup of Oregon, USC, and the Pac-10 championship, and what more could you ask for?
Right. And you also have Utah in there, and I mean, I can't ignore them. You know, they are building a great football program, or already have a great football program. TCU, as we talked about, in Boise State, those three kind of ring in my mind to be top upcoming programs. Now, with the Utah and the Pac-10, do you think this is kind of a strategy move on their part? They're going to be able to recruit a lot better or try to, and then kind of live up to the standards of, say, a USC in 5 years or so?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're definitely a winner in this conference expansion because they joined a power conference, a BCS conference. They have no, there's no doubt that they could qualify easily for a BCS bowl game. And, I mean, as far as recruiting, you sell a kid on the opportunity to play USC in the season, UCLA, you know, you can tap into the Southern California hotbeds, even the Northern California hotbeds. So definitely a smart move by Utah. I like their move to the Pac-10.
Now, we move on to the second idea that Ted Miller has here. The East-West split, similar to the SEC. Ted Miller calls this a zipper plan. This is probably the less likely option for the Pac-10, I think he thinks. And then you have heard also of a different strategy that might be there, but we're going to get to that in a little bit. We're going to talk about this first. The East-West, we're looking at it right now. It's the exact opposite of the North-South. You have the rivals in opposing conferences with the East, Washington State, USC, Stanford, Arizona, Oregon, Colorado, the West, Washington, UCLA, California, Arizona State, Oregon State, and Utah. What do you think about that?
I would imagine he's planning on having one cross-division game each year, and that's against your rival, which, interesting idea. And it looks like this scenario balances out the power in the Pac-10 a little better. You know, you split up some of the powers in the East, and then there's more in the West. You got USC in the East. Oregon's also in the East, though, so that's kind of a top-heavy.
And Stanford.
Stanford
is also in there. I think the West is clearly the weaker division in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I like this as much. It would be simple just to have all your rivals in your division, and then you don't play a cross-division game until the title game. I mean, that just, you keep it simple, that makes sense to me, you know?
Right. So. And another thing I think about this, you said they could have one, you know, cross-division game each year, you know, with your rivals, but a lot of these teams maybe have multiple rivals. I mean, with USC, I'm thinking it's USC, UCLA first. You have to play Cal in that, I think, too. That's another rival. They have Stanford in their own division, so that works for them, but you know, you think about this type of stuff, and there's teams with multiple rivals. And then there's the Colorado-Utah matchup, which would be the cross rivalry in that one. Kind of trying, the Pac-10's trying to develop another classic rivalry there.
Yeah. And I mean, with, let's say you have your cross division rival, you play them towards the end of the year, maybe. So let's say USC plays, I don't know, Oregon State in one of the final weeks of the season. Well, what if those two teams win their divisions and then they meet again a week or two later in the Pac-10 championship? You know, not, that happens sometimes in the SEC too, with Florida and Alabama and even in the Big 12 sometimes. But yeah, it kind of takes away some of the luster of that conference championship game, I think, if you're playing a team you just played a week or two earlier, you know?
Right. And, you know, if USC was playing Oregon State, I think Oregon State would probably win that game because it always seems to happen.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I think we both agree that in these two situations, North-South is probably the better split, keeping rivalries in the division.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Now, you have heard of a different strategy for this conference. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, ESPN just this morning had a little article about Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-10, he's throwing around the idea of not even splitting up the divisions, which I'm not sure where he's going with that. But, you know, it's just an idea at this point. And I think that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because I thought the goal of expanding was to get two divisions so you'd have a championship, you know?
Yeah.
If you'd keep it all one division and just have the top two play for the championship, you know, it doesn't make as much sense as splitting them up.
That's an interesting point there, making this Pac-12 one whole thing. Say, You were going to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, I was just going to say I fully expect the North-South split. That makes total sense because not only the division rivals, but the recruiting areas are kind of split up pretty evenly, gives each division a chance to go into California areas, So I think that obviously makes the most sense. I expect that to happen.
Now, this is a little bit of a fun part. You can talk about a new rivalry here, Colorado-Utah. How do you think that would pan out? I think Utah would probably dominate it, at least for the first few years. I think they have a better program, but Colorado could always get back to its Cordell Stewart days, I suppose.
Yep, I think Utah, for the next, I'd say, 5 years, would just dominate that. But I expect Colorado, this to be Dan Hawkins' last year for Colorado. They'll get a new coach just in time to go to the Pac-10. He'll need a few years to build it up, to recruit guys for his system. And then maybe, 5-6 years down the line, they got a pretty good rivalry there with Utah and Colorado.
All right, so I think the Pac-10's got a good look right now as for who is coming into their conference. Now going to be called the Pac-12. I'm not sure that the Pac-10 is done right now, adding teams. I think in the future there could be more to come.
Definitely, and I think all the expansion's on hold right now, but, the Big 12, they only have 10 right now. You'd think they're because they lost their division split, they're all going to be one big division now. You'd think they want to get back to where they were.
Mm-hmm.
What if they add Houston, TCU, somebody like that?
Then TCU is definitely a valid choice. I think that would be a very, very good choice, being that they are right there in Texas. They could have just, and Houston as well, all of those Texas teams that are the most competitive.
Definitely. And then, if the Big 12 keeps expanding, I would expect the dominoes to start falling again. They just kind of need somebody to get it started. And the Pac-10, Larry Scott's shown that he's not going to sit back and wait for stuff to happen. He's been proactive. Right. He actually started all the big expansion by officially offering Colorado.
Which is, it's good for the Pac-10 to have Larry Scott. I think they were kind of a conference that people viewed as not a very competitive conference, kind of a two-headed monster, I guess, at the top every year. USC would have the championship every year there without a title game. I think a title game obviously changes the face of this conference. It gives them a little bit more better reputation, I suppose, a little bit more excitement like we've seen in the SEC and the Big 12 in the past years.
Yeah, Scott's definitely making all the right moves, as opposed to Dan Beebe from the Big 12, who essentially told some of his teams, you either commit to me right now or you're gone, which I don't know why he's trying to do that, because if everybody leaves, he's out of a job. So it's like, that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Now, well, I think we have to talk about here, while we're still in the Pac-10, about USC's sanctions. I'm not completely positive on all the gritty details of that. I think it's 2 years without postseason play.
Yeah, loss of some scholarships,
loss
I think.
Loss of some scholarships.
I forget the number, maybe. I can't remember, but they only have 13 per year, I think, for the next 3 years, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that. So,
how do you think that would... we'll take it 2 years down the line now. Let's not consider next season because there's not these new teams. You're going to throw these new teams in the second year of that, and who knows, there might be more of that to come at USC. We don't really know all of the details there, but how do you think that affects USC's program and how that affects, in turn, the Pac-10 to the teams that USC plays and just really et cetera, et cetera?
Well, let's say you're recruiting a kid who's going to be a senior in high school next year. You want him to come to USC, but you can't promise him he's going to play in a bowl game in his first 2 years, and that's why you play for a team. You want to get to the championship games, bowl games. If you can't do that the first 2 years, I don't know what is so enticing about USC. But not even the recruits now. Think about the going-to-be juniors for USC. Their final 2 years, they can't even play in a bowl game. So
yeah,
you would expect some of them to leave, which hurts the depth of USC even more. And let's say, I was going to say something about recruiting. Oh, I know. Since they have a limited number of scholarships, they have a very small margin of error on recruits. I mean, if they have one or two guys that turn out to be busts in a class, their numbers are so small anyway, their depth is just going to be shot. So they're going to have to, every single kid they bring in while they're under this probation is going to have to be a contributor and is going to have to be a good player, or else they're looking at some long-term depth issues, I think.
And even with the new coach, Lane Kiffin, who I was very questionable of when they hired him, he's not going to get a chance to prove himself now for at least 2 years, not being in a postseason game. But looking at the other end of the spectrum now, you talk about recruits. Now, Utah and maybe even Colorado, but I think more Utah coming from the Mountain West, they're going to go out there recruiting seniors and then the juniors in high school, and they're going to say, come to Utah, you're going to be playing in the Pac-10 in 2 years. And that should benefit them a lot in recruiting.
And definitely for the rest of the teams in the Pac-10, these next 2 years are going to be big for them because they can take a lot of recruits that USC would normally take but can't get. And then you talk about how Pac-10's been a two-headed monster at the top and kind of top-heavy. Well, this is the chance for the rest of the conference to kind of balance that out a bit and close that gap a little bit between the bottom teams and USC.
So this could definitely be a blessing in disguise kind of for the rest of the Pac-10.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, I think that's enough Pac-10 talk. We're going to move to a more regional conference now. The Big Ten, or what's going to become the Big 12. First, I was really interested to read Adam Rittenberg, and he's kind of talking about which Big Ten rivalries are worth saving, because we're going to go into how he thinks the Big Ten should be split. In your opinion here, we can look at the list. He has a list of hands-off at the top here, handle with care, which is kind of a maybe or maybe not, and then an expendable, which is something you could get rid of. You go to a Big Ten school, you work on the football team. What rivalries have you seen among the Big Ten that need to be saved first? So I can pitch in a little bit. The first one on the list, Michigan, Ohio State, definitely has to stay.
Yeah, you can't touch it. I mean, that's probably in all of sports, not even just college football, one of the best rivalries in the game. So definitely don't touch that one. See, Rittenberg has Minnesota-Wisconsin at the hands-off section of his rivalries, which it's a trophy game, so it's a rivalry because of that trophy, but competitively, it's not that much of a rivalry, I don't think.
Right.
Wisconsin dominates that series pretty much, so I would put that in a lower level, maybe handle with care.
Okay.
Definitely preserve the Michigan-Michigan State. That's always a big one.
Right.
Indiana-Purdue, although there's not a whole lot of meaning in the rivalry, it's just, the in-state battle.
Minnesota-Iowa, again, kind of seems like the Minnesota-Wisconsin one, where Iowa's going to dominate that. So
exactly. And then we're noticing a theme. I don't think Minnesota has a true rival right now, which you kind of got to feel bad for them.
Yeah.
But, there's only just a couple rivalries, I would say, hands off. So
probably the Michigan-Ohio State, Michigan-Michigan State, and Indiana-Purdue. One I look at in the handle with care, a couple actually. I don't know if you want to split up Ohio State, Penn State, and even Illinois-Ohio State, I think, is a very good rivalry that they have there.
Yeah, there's another battle for a trophy there. And unfortunately, Ohio State's dominated lately, but that's a historic rivalry. But there's a rivalry down in the expendable category, which kind of surprises me, and that's Illinois-Northwestern.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not just saying this because I'm an Illinois guy, but that's an in-state battle. It's been hot since it started, basically, and I think the 20s or whatever, back when Red Grange was still around. So, and it's even gone so far that those two teams are playing at Wrigley this year, and they're trying to make it a big event. So
okay.
I would say that's a little higher priority of saving.
Those in-state rivalries you really need to preserve. And then one list down from Illinois, Northwestern, Indiana-Illinois, a pretty good rivalry.
Basketball more than football, really.
Yeah,
yeah, people get geared up for that basketball rivalry because, Indiana's a big basketball school. Illinois kind of right now is a basketball school, but... Yeah, I wouldn't say it's I could say it's expendable, yeah, definitely for football.
Right. And then, you know, you look at the rest. There's a couple that are good rivalries in terms of competition. Penn State, Michigan catches my eye. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan State, Indiana is a decent rivalry also. Michigan State's getting to be a lot better program. And in terms of all of this, the Big Ten adds Nebraska, could have added Missouri, and I think Kansas was also in the discussion for that. You know, if you talk about adding Missouri, and you want to say that the top two rivalries in this conference are Michigan-Ohio State and Michigan-Michigan State, maybe, then you probably add a number three rivalry with Illinois and Missouri, wouldn't you think?
That's a pretty big one, yeah. Football and basketball, it's always a big deal. They play in St. Louis every year, big event, big turnout. It's just Illinois dominates the basketball rivalry, and then Missouri dominates football. So they balance out, and it's a great event.
Now, here we're still on Adam Rittenberg. He's going to break up the Big Ten or Big 12 divisions now into a couple different things. But he lists some objectives here, which I think are interesting when you're deciding who to put where. And I want to get your opinion on which objective you think is the most important. Now, he lists competitive balance, which should be an important thing, rivalries, which we just talked about, which ones you can keep and which ones you can't, and also national appeal. I think based on this list top to bottom, he probably has them in the right order. I maybe would put national appeal over rivalries just because I think the Big Ten has struggled with national appeal in the past few years.
Yeah, they get that knack on them that they can't perform in the big games, you know. So I would say national appeal is more important than rivalries because, you know, you can have cross-division rivalries like we talked about in the Pac-10. Yeah. Even though they're not in the same division, you can still play them. But without a doubt, competitive balance at the top, because you don't want it to turn into a what used to be the Big 12 South domination, where they had four teams that dominated, and then there's one team maybe in the Big 12 North that just won every year.
Right.
The South was stacked.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, so that's pretty accurate. Top three right there. Here are his proposed divisions. I mean, he doesn't have them listed North South. He just has them listed by two misspellings of the commissioner's name, I suppose. These are his proposed divisions, which I tend to like now that I'm looking at them. Penn State, Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern Indiana, and Purdue are in one division, as opposed to Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois in another division. I don't know. You go first and tell me what you think of, say, the top division.
Well, I mean, that competitively is a good division, but then you start getting into the geographics of it. Think how much money Penn State is going to be shelling out each year to travel to Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern, Indiana, and Purdue. None of those teams are very close to them. And same with Nebraska. They have to go pretty far to get to Penn State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you divide this up geographically, there's really no good way to do it right now.
Right.
But I guess this is about as good as a scenario as you can do with what you have right now.
Now, the Penn State thing, though, is something that's been the case every year. There's really no schools that are very close to them, Ohio State being the closest, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think, yeah, competitively, that's a good division. I do think Penn State, Nebraska would be a national appeal game. I think those are two similar teams, and they could play very well to, against one another. Iowa also in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern, Indiana, and Purdue are just kind of given the shaft in this division, it seems like.
Pretty much, yeah. Each division has, looks like, three teams that are clearly at the top, and then the three bottom teams you almost have to feel bad for.
Yeah.
They're not going to do a whole lot in these divisions.
The second division, Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois. I'm a huge fan of that division. I really like it in terms of being regional. They are all relatively close to each other. I like the fact that you keep Ohio State with Wisconsin. I think that's usually a very good game. Michigan State, Michigan is in there. I like Minnesota and I like Illinois. And I think, you know, the first division is very top heavy with three teams. I think this division can even out a lot, you know, because Illinois and Wisconsin and, I mean, who knows about Minnesota, they can all develop good programs.
Mm-hmm. And if Michigan rebounds here, they're going to be adding to the competitiveness of that division. And Wisconsin, you know, every year is kind of just quietly dominant, you know. Nobody ever picks them very high in the preseason, but then they end up somewhere near the top 10, top 15 by the end of the season, and they're performing well in their bowl game. So
all right,
every year, they're always going to be a contender, I think. Minnesota and Illinois are the two right now. They're far beyond the rest, unfortunately.
So let's look at his projected crossovers here. I'm going to let you turn to the Big Ten page from what Phil Steele thinks. We're going to look at, kind of preview this conference this year, who should be dominant. I think Ohio State will be dominant. Here are the projective crossovers for Adam Rittenberg. Penn State, Ohio State, Nebraska versus Michigan, Iowa versus Minnesota. I don't like that.
Nope.
Northwestern versus Wisconsin. I don't really like that. Indiana and Illinois, that's okay. Purdue and Michigan State, that's okay also. What do you think about the crossovers?
Well, it looks like Rittenberg paid close attention to the top two or three rivalries and then just kind of filled in the rest. You know, it didn't look like he gave much thought to this other than the top three. But like you were saying, you don't like Iowa and Minnesota. I agree with that. Why don't you put Iowa and Nebraska together, you know?
Yeah.
Two powerhouses. That'd be a great game every year. And geographically, it's not that far away. So that makes a lot more sense to me than Iowa dominating Minnesota every year. And I guess Nebraska and Michigan would be a good one, but I think Iowa and Nebraska makes more sense.
Yeah, I think, those top three are kind of something you might want to change. I mean, don't make it permanent, because I think you want to see, especially in the early years here, how Nebraska is going to do and who their biggest rival is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nebraska is one of the more interesting additions to a conference this year, because I didn't see them in the Big Ten, really. I saw Missouri and I saw Kansas, and I don't know what to think about Nebraska. I think it's a good pick up in terms of style of play, because I think there are a couple teams in this division that play their same kind of football.
Yeah, they talk about the Big Ten smash mouth style of football. That's Nebraska, really. I guess Bo Pelini's kind of changing that a bit. He's going more to the high-octane spread type stuff, but still, it's always going to be Nebraska with that smash mouth style of football.
Now, what should we look for in the Big Ten this year?
Well, I think you have to start with Ohio State. They're always going to be a favorite. And, again, they're loaded this year. Got a third-year quarterback back in Terrell Pryor. They got Cameron Hayward back on the defensive line, which is huge. He passed up a lot of money to come back.
Right.
The thing is, they're questionable in the secondary right now. But knowing Ohio State and their recruiting, you know they're going to find guys to fit the spot. And, a lot of people forget to talk about him, but Wisconsin this year, John Clay coming back, Tolzien at the quarterback, and they've always got those massive offensive lines opening holes for the running back. So I think they're going to be good this year, I'm pretty sure. And I want to say Phil Steele had them ranked in the top 10. I can't remember what number. Unfortunately for them, that equates to a fourth place finish in the Big Ten, just because there's a lot of good teams this year. So I think it'll be competitive. Iowa, too, you got to look at.
Iowa just snuck up on us last year, I think.
They did, and they got kind of lucky. A lot of close games they pulled out in the end. Ricky Stanzi threw picks like it was his job, but somehow found a way to win games. So but he's back. You'd think he'll be a little more composed and not throw so many picks. They got Jewel Hampton back at running back, Johnson Koulianos and McNutt at wide receiver. They've got Adrian Claiborne on the D-line. He's probably one of the best defensive linemen in the nation, so you definitely look at them as a contender.
Right.
And Norm Parker, their defense coordinator, he always is one of the best minds, defensive minds in college football, so he'll find a way to put guys in the right spot.
Now, so that's kind of the thing for the Big Ten. I want to jump back here a little bit. I just pulled up this article about the no Pac-10 divisions, and Ivan Mizell makes a good point that I've heard very often, that the league is worried about getting every team in the conference, or most every team, to play in Los Angeles every single year, which is a recruiting hotbed and I think is a very important location for the Pac-10. I do think that's a very valid point. I think maybe I like the two divisions better, but certainly that is a state to worry about.
Yeah, they've got a lot to figure out here in the next couple of years for the Pac-10, but I mean, you got to consider that, but there's just, to me, there's just no way you can't split these up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd expect that to happen.
And like you said earlier, I think that that was definitely the point.
Mm-hmm.
Now back to the Big Ten. Were you upset that Missouri didn't join the Big Ten and they stayed in the Big 12?
Well, if you, on the surface, yes, because they're a good fit for the Big Ten. I think they have good rivalry with Illinois. But then if you look deeper, I don't know exactly what they would bring to the conference. They're not bringing a huge media market that they don't already have. I mean, Illinois gets a pretty good portion of the St. Louis market already. You know, they're not bringing a strong academic presence. Mizzou is not mm-hmm. one of the main, it's not as high as Nebraska, let me say that.
Okay.
And, you know, they're not, there's just not one thing they're bringing that I think the Big Ten really needs. So if you, I guess I'm deep down, no, you don't really need them in the Big Ten. But, if they are going to add some more people, got to look to your Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Okay.
But, I don't see them joining the Big Ten, unfortunately, which...
Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean...
No.
Yeah, it would be great for the Big Ten, but I don't see them doing it.
I definitely don't see that. I mean, for years and years, I don't see Notre Dame ever joining a conference. I think I heard somebody talking about Texas last night and how they're kind of winners in all of this, having stayed in the Big 12 and just... I mean, they're the team that everybody wants, obviously, for good reason. I think Notre Dame likes the fact that they are the team that everybody wants also,
mm-hmm.
Just along Texas. And I think just, you know, having their independence is very, very important to them. I mean, I don't think that they wanted to move, especially to the Big Ten. Really the only place I could see them moving was the Big East, just because they are with them in basketball
mm-hmm.
and other sports like that. But, I mean, I really don't see Notre Dame ever moving as far into the future as I can project right now. I just think they're happy where they are.
Yeah, I agree. They like the independence too much. And, you know, they're making money off the NBC deal, although they could make some even more money off of the Big Ten Network, and they'd get a portion of the bowl payouts for each of the Big Ten teams that go. So, and also, if you think about it, they would save a lot of money in travel expenses if they just joined a conference, because, you know, now they're paying to go out to USC, they're going out to Boston College. Well, if they're in the Big Ten, their road trips might include Michigan, which is a short trip,
right.
Illinois, Northwestern, you know, save a lot of money there, but I guess you could see why they won't want to join.
Yeah, I think... And we talk a lot about preserving rivalries in these new conferences. I think that's something that Notre Dame definitely likes, to have their independence, because they're able to do that
mm-hmm.
playing like USC. And granted, they play a lot of teams in the Big Ten.
Right.
But, I mean, they also go out to Washington almost every year. They'll play North Carolina or Duke every year and teams like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Navy, for instance,
that's
is
true.
Another team.
Forgot about the Armed Forces games.
Yeah, there's another team that they play, and then, you know, usually they'll play, say, like, Pittsburgh or Connecticut, so they go all over the place, and I think it saves a lot of travel expenses, but I think it does a lot in terms of recruiting and getting your face out there. Not that nobody knows about Notre Dame,
right.
But I think that's why they'll probably stay independent.
Yeah, and if that's the case, which is probably true, you'd have to think the Big Ten's going to just move to the eastward if they're going to expand anywhere else. I've heard Maryland thrown around, even Virginia is a possibility, Rutgers, maybe Pitt. I think the most likely ones are Rutgers, maybe Maryland, so they can get the Washington, D.C., Baltimore market.
But right.
You just never know. It's crazy right now in college football.
All right, so I think that's we've talked about conference a lot. Now let's go to Phil Steele here. If you want to, I mean, I don't know if you have any teams in your mind that you really want to break down here for a little bit. I guess the first team we should talk about is Illinois, just because you know them probably better than anybody I know. So obviously they lost Juice Williams, mm-hmm. and Aurelius Ben and some other big names, obviously. So that takes a big hit. The guy I can't wait to see on their team, I can't remember his name. So one of the running backs exploded for a couple games at the end of last year.
Probably Michael Ashour from Champaign Centennial.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think losing Juice Williams, you know, he's the face of the program, but productivity-wise, this past season was not a good year for him.
Yeah.
2 years ago, he passed for a lot of yards, but threw a lot of picks at probably the worst times in games that he could have. You know, they're driving, trying to win. He's throwing picks, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, he was great for the program and a great leader and ambassador, but I think they're ready to move on to a more polished quarterback. Because Juice, I mean, he came from the Chicago Public League, which there's not a lot of teaching going on up there. So he was almost raw coming out of high school. And he just had to learn basically on the fly as he was thrown into the fire as a freshman. So
who is their quarterback going to be this year? Is it a battle or is there one person out there?
There was a battle through the spring, and mm-hmm. just recently, I think it's the beginning of June, they named Nathan Shielhouse, who's a redshirt freshman this year. He's going to be the starter. He's a talented kid out of Rockhurst, Missouri. So he's quick, you know, he's mobile, so which gives another element the defense has to prepare for. But you always worry about, no matter how talented a guy is, he hasn't played a college game before, so you don't know how he's going to do in his first season. And they had their backup quarterback, who was battling Shielhouse for the spot. He transferred. So now they have Shielhouse, and they have another true freshman who have absolutely no experience as their top two quarterbacks. And then they're even switching back to Eddie McGee, who was going to be a wide receiver, but he's going to have to work in a quarterback now, just to get some experience back there.
So they're kind of in flux, it seems like, a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the big question marks going into the season, is the quarterback play.
You mentioned Ron Zook's on the hot seat, I think you talked about.
According to some people, yeah. He's definitely got to be careful here. But see, all these new assistants they hired, they got six new guys this offseason, and they're all given two-year contracts, which makes you think the athletic director, Ron Gunther, is going to give Zook two more years, and then he's going to evaluate when these assistant contracts are up.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to bring Zook back and all these assistants back, or do we want to go a different direction? So, if they show some improvement this year, not necessarily have to be a bowl team, but let's say they go 4-8, 5-7, but they're in every game, playing well, close in every game, I think he'll be back for 2011.
Is there any... Sometimes this is the case. Is there any teams that Illinois could beat this year that kind of saves his job just a little bit more? I know for Notre Dame, that team's USC. If you beat USC, they feel pretty safe with you.
Definitely. If Zook can pull out a win against Missouri in week one, this is the last year Illinois and Missouri are going to play, and Missouri's won the last 3 years, and then going back to like 2002, 2003, they won three more in that time. So Illinois hasn't beat them in a while. So if he beats Missouri, they start off 1-0. I think people are feeling pretty good. And obviously if you beat Ohio State, we got them coming to Champaign this year, so
okay.
It could either be really good or really bad, but yeah, that could definitely save the job, but
you don't want to embarrass yourself in front of your home fans, I guess.
No, definitely not, yeah. And they're going to be out to see that one, because the home schedule is kind of weak this year. They got really no big names except Ohio State, so that's going to be a big one for fan base.
The Illini defense, still pretty good, decent.
They return a lot, which is good.
Uh-huh.
The defensive line is a little bit thin, which kind of concerns me, especially that defensive tackle. They've got talent, but they're all young and raw. So they may be a couple years from being dominant, but they've got a lot of good linebackers back, and one of them is Martez Wilson, who's
right.
coming off a season-ending injury, so I think he's back and ready to go. He's the leader of that defense without question.
Now, when he's on his game, he's one of the best linebackers in the nation, right?
Yeah, you got it. He's got to be up there. He's just a freak athlete, which helps him out a lot. He's a, you know, if you imagine a 255-pound linebacker coming at you with 4.49 speed is about what he ran out of high school, so... He's a pretty good athlete, and I feel pretty good about the linebacker position, but secondary, the cornerbacks are very solid. We've got an all Big Ten freshman cornerback in Terry Hawthorne coming back for his sophomore year, and his partner on the other side, Tavon Wilson, another very solid cornerback out of D.C. So the real question is the safeties. We're not very deep or experienced there.
Okay.
A lot of questions, but new defensive coordinator, I like what he brings. Brings a new attitude, fresh start for everybody, so we'll see how it turns out.
So I guess overall, real quick, any final thoughts on U of I? How do you think they'll do this year, and who's the team that they have to beat?
Win-loss wise, I would say 5-7 is probably realistic.
Okay.
They could get lucky and squeeze out a couple wins, maybe 6-6 right around there, possibly even 7-5, but my best guess is 5-7. I don't think they're going to pull off any huge wins this year, but for the first time in a while, I think they'll beat all the teams they're supposed to beat, you know, if you match them up on paper. They haven't done that the last couple of years. So, and that's good enough for me, I think. If they show a lot of improvement, don't blow any games, they should easily win. I guess I'll be satisfied.
All right. Now, I'm going to let you take this. You've been looking at the top, whatever, 20 or so teams here for a little bit. Who do you want to talk about?
Well, you got your regulars at the top there.
You said he has some weird people up in the top, or people you wouldn't think of this year.
Yeah, let's start with Oklahoma. Phil Steele, see, he's known as one of the most accurate in the business at predicting college football. So, all right. And usually his... title winners are pretty accurate. So this year, he goes out on a limb, and he picks Oklahoma to go undefeated and win the national title, which is an interesting pick because they lose Bradford, although he didn't play a whole lot last year. They still lose a leading quarterback. But they also have a good one come back in Landry Jones. And all their losses last year, I think four of them or something were within 3 points, 2 or 3 points. So... they got those close losses, which Phil Steele looks at a lot in teams that turn around if they had close losses the year before. So, yeah, that's an interesting one, Oklahoma to win the title. I think he's the only person that picked them out of all the preseason magazines. But other than that, you know, he's got your regulars at the top where you'd expect. A team that he's got in his top 15 is North Carolina at 12, which a lot of people are saying... is definitely a dark horse that could possibly win the national title.
No, I like them, and I'm not going to predict anything just yet because we can probably do one of those sessions a little bit later in the summer here.
Absolutely.
But North Carolina's defense might be the best in the nation this year. After a few games, you could really... start to see them coming on, and they play in the ACC, a conference that they could dominate with that defense, and if they find a little bit of offense, then that they could win a national title with the players that they have and all the talent that is at their disposal. I have a cousin who goes to North Carolina, And he talks about that team all the time, and he says the defense is just amazing. I saw Mel Kiper's, after the NFL draft, I saw his like top five of next year or whatever from each position, and I think like five North Carolina defenders were on the list somewhere there.
Yeah, it's crazy how loaded they are. They've got the top defensive tackle in college football, the top defensive end right next to that tackle in college football. They have two of the top linebackers in college football. And Gordon and Phil Steele here, they've got the number one defensive line unit in the nation, number one linebacking unit in the nation. And I think they're number eight in defensive backs in the nation. So, you know, clearly they're loaded. And I think you could see as many as three or four of them taken in the top probably 15 of the next year's drafts off of this defense. So,
see, that's amazing. And just that stat alone makes you want to think that this team could win a national title.
They've got a shot. Definitely on paper, they're looking good. But then going back to the rest of his top teams for this year, he puts Oregon up there. I'm not sure I agree with that with all the off-season turmoil they've had,
yeah,
especially now that they've lost Masoli for the rest of the year, or for a career, I mean. That hurts them. They don't have much experience back at quarterback other than him.
Right. Now, I see Texas at number 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, for me, I think that's kind of low. Because the guy who's going to be their starting quarterback this year just almost won a national championship last year.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was with some better players. They lost a lot of very good players, especially Colt McCoy. But I think just that quarterback getting his experience from that game and almost winning is something that you can't ignore.
Yeah, you talk about having to grow up quickly. He's thrown into the fire in the title game. All eyes in the nation are on him. And
yeah,
I think he probably only needed that game to just grow up, and he'll be ready to go come August or September of this year.
Yeah.
Definitely. Looking at the rest of this top 40 he has here, an interesting pick is Notre Dame at 16. This will make you happy, Mac. He's got them ranked pretty highly. And in his preview, he talks about how this is going to be their year to come back. Phil Steele's a big Brian Kelly fan. He talks about how everywhere he's gone in his first year, he's turned it around almost instantly, starting with Central Michigan, then to Cincinnati, now to Notre Dame. So he expects big things from them. Then rounding out the rest of the top 40, pretty standard. Got an interesting pick, Middle Tennessee up there, almost in the top 30, which that'll surprise a lot of people, including myself.
Yeah.
He has Michigan in the top 40, and he thinks they're going to turn it around this year. I think he predicts 8 wins for them, which is what's going to take to save Rodriguez's job, I think.
Right. Maybe. I mean, there's not a lot that can save his job.
That's right.
I think
the Michigan fans want national title or bust from the way they're talking. So, yeah, he's not a very popular guy up there.
So, whole top 40 thrown out there. I think we'll have to come back to evaluate that pretty fully another time. But I think obviously the thing that we should take from this whole thing is that Notre Dame's ranked number 16.
Yeah, if Mac remembers one thing from this podcast, it's that Notre Dame's ranked highly.
There we go. Now I'm going to be excited for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Oklahoma is kind of, I'm surprised, but I mean, I do think that I talked about the Texas quarterback, but Landry's probably got just as much experience playing for them last year and playing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I mentioned North Carolina. I'm going to have to seriously break them down one of these days, because I do really like them for a national title. They're one of my probably top three teams to win it, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Along with, I don't know, I think Ohio State, but I'm cautiously picking them.
Mm-hmm. You just never know with them.
Yeah, I think Alabama could win also.
Yeah, they return a lot as well.
Yep.
So you got to start with the defending champs. A couple notes for those who can't believe why Oklahoma might be a title pick. Phil Steele actually makes a few good points here. He talks about, much like 2000, which is the last time they won a national title, they were coming off a 5-loss season, which is what they're coming off of last year. And he says this year they're even better prepared to win it than they were in 2000. Back in 2000, they had just one winning season in the previous 6 years, and their recruiting was not, it hadn't been going very well yet because Bob Stoops was just getting started. But this Sooner squad has had recruiting classes ranked at the top, and they've finished in the top 11 8 of the last 10 years in recruiting, which is pretty impressive. So, yeah, they also suffered four very close losses last year in games that they could have easily won, and that's a going from 7-5 or 8-5, I guess, to what, 12-1.
Yeah,
so that's
like
a big
that,
difference
probably.
There. Yeah. So he likes them a lot, and he always makes interesting picks, but he has stuff to back it up, and he's right more often than not. So I'd give them a serious consideration.
All right. So Oklahoma is Phil Steele's national title contender. I think we'll have to sleep on that and come back with that another day and really look at that. I think there's a lot of other teams that have a chance to contend this year, but I think that'll be for another day. I think we're out of time here for the podcast, so it was good having you on, and we'll talk college football again soon.
Yep, that sounds good to me.
All right, and thanks for tuning in to the 5th and Inches podcast, and stay tuned for many, many more podcasts to come. Ooh, what you say? Mm,